Josh has in his possession the handout on Islam that starts out with the front. The first heading is introduction. That's the actual one we're going to be utilizing tonight. There was a second handout that was placed in the back. And basically what that is that was my own material that I accidentally made 45 copies of. And I managed to stop it before the all 60 were made, but that's what happened. So I put that in the back. Basically what it consists of is just a chronology of Islam religion from its inception until today. But it's source material. I didn't write it. It came from Wikipedia, one of those major authoritative sources on the internet. And it is somewhat redundant. I know, I didn't mean that seriously there. but it is good for kind of surface reading. But it is somewhat redundant. In other words, it has some material that is also found on the page that we are going to study. Now, I made 45 copies, and so I put the handouts, those 45 copies, in the back. So if you would like to take one when you leave, feel free to do so. But I did post at the top of that page a little writing, Wikipedia reference to Islam. And that's where that's just kind of copied and pasted. I deleted some aspects of it and just kind of had something there to read on my own. That's all that was intended, but I accidentally printed two pages instead of just the first page. So that was my mistake. All right, so that explains that. But again, Josh has a copy of the one that has the introduction at the top, and that's what we're going to be studying in our lesson. So if you need a copy and don't have one, if you will raise your hand. I think pretty much everybody did get one. Anybody else? All right, so that will be everyone. And we'll begin our study of Islam. And, you know, one of the things that I want to keep in mind with regard to this, I want you to understand this is basically a capsule study of the religion. It's not intended to refute the religion, though we will do a little bit of refutation in our study. It's not intended to be an in-depth study because that would not be possible. For one, I'm not an expert enough on it to do that kind of study. What has become obvious to me in the time that I've spent studying and preparing this material is that there is an awful lot about the religion of Islam that I don't know, intricacies, nuances, that I don't think that I would be able to understand. I don't think that an outsider could understand fully. And I want to kind of approach this for us by keeping this in mind. When we talk about, when the world talks about Christianity, the world has a very different view of Christianity than what is actually revealed in the Bible and what we believe to be so. In fact, there are a number of times on this particular page where I used the term Christianity, and I felt each time I did, I had to put in quotation marks. I intended to. I may have missed one, but I intended to put in quotation marks because I do not believe that most people who say that they are Christians in actuality are. And the reason I would take that position is because they do not believe the gospel, but rather a perversion. They do not obey those commands that God requires for an individual to become a child of God. Though they are culturally and even with regard to adherence to denominational creeds and practices, religiously identifying themselves as Christians. So, when the world talks about the Christian faith, they are talking about something different than when you and I talk about the Christian faith. And I'm not arrogant enough to think that that by looking at various resources and all that I can have a full understanding of what the Islamic faith means to Muslims. In fact, what I have become aware of very clearly, and of course I knew this somewhat before, but it's certainly the case after this study, is that Islams don't agree on what, or Muslims don't agree on what Islam is. There are various sects and subsects and nuances that are found there where you have the Sunnis and the Shiites that are fighting one another all the time, and they have very different views of what Islam is. So it's not a monolithic type of thing to study. And our intent is not to, again, refute it, though we will speak to that for a few moments at the beginning. And it's certainly not our intent to study this as we would if we were talking geopolitically with regard to present conflicts and what the world is going through. This is more a history lesson. That's the intent. So you'll basically know what it is, where it came from, all the origins and such. If you want to study further on that, then there's plenty of material that's found on the internet, plenty of books on that. If you want to talk about some specifics after we finish this, it's not sufficient. If you want to discuss a little bit more in this class, we certainly can. You'll just have to tell me what direction you want to go with it so that we can spend some time in preparation. But that's the intent, basically, is to give an overview of the religion. Okay? So, we'll begin in just a moment. Jerry Byrne, would you leave some word of prayer, please? Start.
Holy Father in heaven, we're thankful for this day, Father. Thank you for this time here to come study that word. Father, help us to be the diligent students as we learn here tonight, that we'll learn the truth, Father, that we take it out to our lives, take it to our lives, and take it to the worlds we need. Father, be with those that are in the classes, be with the young people, be with those who are teaching them, to help them to learn the things that they need to know, Father. Thankful for all the many gifts you've given us, most of all for your Son, who came into this earth. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Okay, if you look at the introduction in the handout, Islam is one of the three major monotheistic religions. We mentioned them last time in our study of Judaism as one of the other three. So it's Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And the heritage of the Islamic faith, but at least its purported heritage, is something that goes back to the time of Abraham. And if you look at the two children of Abraham, Isaac and Ishmael, the Muslims, they relate to the son Ishmael, the firstborn of Abraham. And so they claim an allegiance with the God of the Old Testament. Now, there are some problems with that from the Christian, or let's say the Judeo-Christian point of view, with regard to the character of God as it is spoken of in the Quran and in the Muslim faith, the Islam religion. So, you know, when we hear the word Allah, which is the Arabic word for Jehovah or God, we still have a problem with the God of the Muslims, because the God of the Muslims is as he is characterized or pictured in their writings, is a distortion of who Jehovah truly is, who God truly is. And so we're going to kind of make note of that as we begin. And when we talk about refutation, there are basically two points that I have in the entirety of the handout. The first one's the second bullet point under introduction, and the other one is the second bullet point under nature in the second column. But our point of view, of course, is that the Islamic religion is from man. We're going to explain to you why we think that to be the case. But if it derives from man rather than from God, it is, by definition, a false religion. It is not a valid or true one. And the text that I use to make that point, and there are many that we could look at, but Matthew chapter 15 and verse 9, where you'll remember the Lord is quoting a prophecy of Isaiah about the Pharisees with regard to their supplying man-made traditions. And he says in verse 9, "In vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men." Well, the Quran is the holy book of the Muslims, of the Islam religion. It is purported to be the revelations that the prophet Muhammad received from the angel Gabriel. And when he was 40 years old, Muhammad claimed that Gabriel appeared to him, and he began to receive revelations from God, direct revelations from God. Those revelations were carefully noted and written down by his followers. Muhammad himself was illiterate. And as a result of that, as they were compiled, they make up the Quran. In addition to that, there are sayings of Muhammad. And so a particular issue would arise, a doctrinal issue or a decision that had to be made, and Muhammad would speak on that issue. And so when he spoke on that issue, those were considered inspired or authoritative teachings by the Muslims. And so when you find the revelations, the teachings, and then the third of the three basic portions of literature, and I'm getting ahead of myself, so I'll have to kind of go down through and find where I put it. Okay, under the first bullet point, under nature. The third is called the Sirah, and Sirah is what it was. I'm trying to remember the pronunciations, but Sirah, which is basically recordings of his journey, having reference to his life. And so if you kind of looked at it this way roughly, that when you're talking about the writings which make up what is authoritative in the religion of Islam, you have the revelations, you have the sayings or teachings of Muhammad, and then you have the histories or the chronology of his life and his journey as he began the Islam faith. And all of those things combined are authoritative to the Muslims. Now, let me give you a parallel. The objection would be raised both by Mormons and by the Muslims. But a parallel that we can see that happened in America in the 19th century would be the purported revelation that Joseph Smith received from the angel Moroni. And it's kind of interesting how those things very much do parallel. So we have an individual who makes a claim that he's receiving revelations. These claims are accepted by a group of people, and those teachings become authoritative. Now, if those things are actually from God, then it is a divine religion. If those things instead have their origin with that man, if that man was making false claims, or if that man was perhaps a schizophrenic or mentally ill in some way, and thought himself to be hearing voices, which he reported to be from God, then that would be a man-made religion or man-devised religion rather than a divine one. And there are a couple of things that I think are contradictory with regard to the Muslim faith that we're going to make note of with regard to its teaching concerning Jesus. And that I think is kind of an indication of the fact that the Muslim faith is humanly derived rather than divinely given or gifted to man. But let's point this out. As Christians, we believe in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. We believe that He is our Savior. We believe that last of all, God spoke through His Son, and that that we have been given the faith once for all delivered to the saints. The religion of Islam came about 6 centuries following the death of Christ. And as such, because of that, we reject the idea that it is indeed a divinely ordained religion. And so we will make that distinction between the Judaism and Christianity, which we accept as divinely ordained. The Old Covenant was given by God through Moses to the children of Israel. The New Covenant has come through His Son Jesus, as He sent Him last of all into the world. And then we have 6 centuries later the beginning of a new religion, and so its origin is from man, and specifically from this man whose name is Muhammad. Now, the second thing we might make note of in that regard is that the religion of Islam is a religion that has evolved over the centuries. What you see practiced today is not the same thing that was practiced in its inception or in its beginning. As a part of that evolution, you have a change in view with regard to different groups of Muslims, so that you can have individuals who will say today, the Islam religion is a religion of peace. And Muslims are peaceful people, and we are more than willing to live with non-believers, those who do not believe as we do, in peace and harmony. And that when we have the term jihad that is used, we are referring to an individual's personal struggle in his life living as a Muslim. It has absolutely no reference to what we might commonly think of jihad as being. And there are many, many. In fact, we might say that the majority of Muslims are that way. However, having said that, we do need to acknowledge that that's not the way Muhammad was. That the entirety of Muhammad's adult life was lived basically warring and using physical warfare, physical battle, as a mean to, number one, consolidate his rule, and secondly, to promote his religion, the religion that he had begun. And that was a practice that continued for centuries following. And so when we talk about the origins of the religion, it becomes very obvious, and we'll look at this if we look at the history, that it had its origins in conflict. Someone was, well, what about Judaism? Yeah, I understand. I recognize that. I don't doubt it a bit. But there are certain things about the Muslim faith as it is practiced by, or the Islam faith, as it's practiced by some Muslims today, that are very very much the reason and cause for the terrorism, the conflict, and such that we see in the world today. And we'll kind of try to make some distinctions in that regard as well as time goes on. So looking at that, we'll say that Islam has evolved as a religion, culture, and polity. And when you hear the word polity, what that means is the idea of the Muslim state. And of course, there is the call. You've heard it on the news a number of times, that there is the desire on the part of some extremists to establish a caliphate. And the term caliphate has reference to the theocracy that is ruled by religious Muslims, religious leaders, but it is something that would be, again, a state. So it would be a civil state, much as Israel was under the old law. And there are those who call for that today. So when you hear the word polity, it's used several times in this, that is the reference to the theocratic state. And so when you look at that, there has been, again, an evolution with regard to the Muslim religion, to the culture. It is rightly predominantly attributed as Arabian, I suppose, with regard to origin. And you'll see why as we get into a discussion of it. Though I've seen some objections to that in our day and time, because Muslims come from every culture and every race, and there are some who actually believe that to attribute it in that way is to be racist in our attribution of Islam. But it had its origins let's take as an example, Muhammad himself was a man who lived in Mecca, which is a city in modern-day Saudi Arabia. And so he is Arabian in that regard. And his followers were as well. And as the influence spread throughout the kingdoms, it became inclusive of other races as well. Places such as Turkey and India. And there are a lot of different places where it spread over the years. And now, of course, in our day and time in Europe, there are very large Muslim populations, as well as in the Americas as well. So it has spread. In fact, it is the second largest religion that exists in the world today. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we go on. So keep in mind that fourth bullet point under introduction, and that is that there is a spectrum of political, cultural, and religious sects and subsects that identifies adherents of Islam. And not only are some in conflict with, and we're talking about physically in conflict with, the rest of the world, but they are actually often in conflict with one another, and that's inclusive also of physical warfare. So there's a lot of violence that is associated with that. Of course, there is a lot of violence that is associated with Christianity as well, if you use that term, the way the world uses it in general. In our day and time. Okay, so now let's look at the... Anybody have any questions about any of those 4 points in the introduction? Anyone not clear? Yes, Jerry?
I'm curious, between the period of Abraham and Muhammad, which is A.D., what happened?
Well, the best way for me to explain this is that Muhammad was born... And he was born, if you'll have the date there in the third point, 570 AD. So he's born in 570 AD, and he was born in a polytheistic society in Mecca. Mecca was an important trading city at that particular time on a trade route that made it a very influential and important place. And the Meccans, these tribes of people, they were in that area, they were polytheists. So they worshiped a number of different gods, and they would be offering up sacrifices to all these different gods in an attempt to appease and please the gods so that their trade would continue. Now, when Muhammad turns 40, he starts receiving these visions. And this is an indication very clearly that he had some teaching and education with regard to the Old Covenant, the Old Testament, with regard to those kinds of spirits. But he received these particular teachings, or these particular revelations, is his claim. And so he basically, out of whole cloth, invented a religion. And I think that most probably the two aspects of this that would make this religion successful, just kind of like Mormonism as well, would be the personal charisma of the individual. And then secondly, his ability to consolidate his followers to where they became an economic force. And that often is the case with regard to religions and with regard to influence. We're going to look at what happened that led to the consolidation of these things. But ultimately, the Muslim faith became, or the Islam faith became very large and all because of all of the economics and the conflicts and all those things that happened in the intervening centuries. He started the religion, or started receiving the revelations, when he was 40 years old, died when he was 62. He died only 2 years after having come back to Mecca and being victorious over that area after he had been run off about 10 years previous. So he comes back and he overtakes them. He becomes basically the predominant force or leader. This is political and military leader in the area. So his views became the predominant views, and as time progressed, they spread. So in that intervening time, there was nothing, because he made it up right then. And so, that's the claim, that the origin of Islam was in the 6th century, or 7th century. And that's what happened. So, again, you know, whenever you have the Muslims, for example, and I know I'm kind of jumping around, so we may have to, when I go back, skip over some of this that's in here. But let's take as an example with regard to the city of Jerusalem. City of Jerusalem, it has been, for the last 1,000 years plus, an area of conflict between Muslims and Jews, and throw the Christians in as well, especially during the period of the Crusades. And it is a geopolitical conflict more than it is a religious conflict, but it has religious underpinning. So basically, the Muslims get the land, and the Christians or the Jews run them out of the land and take over the land, and the Muslims come back and get it back, and then the Christians go back and get it back, and it's back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Well, why is that land so important? Well, for the Jews, it's important because the city of Jerusalem is Mount Zion. And the temple is located on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And, of course, the Jews, at least those who remain Orthodox, are looking for a Messiah to come up and sit on the throne of David, which will be on the Temple Mount. Is it important to the Christians? Well, it certainly was during the time of the Crusades with regard to Catholicism, where you had the Catholic Church thinking that the way to consolidate its power is to drive back the Muslims and to retake the Bible lands, the Holy Lands, and the Catholic Pope would be the most influential leader in the world. And so that was ongoing back in the Middle Ages as well. So that went back and forth. With regard to Muslims, the Muslims believe that the Temple Mount, and some of you, I'm sure all of you have seen the picture in Jerusalem of the Dome of the Rock. And when you take a picture of old Jerusalem, and you're, let's say you're up on at the Garden of Gethsemane, across the valley from the city of Jerusalem, and you look over Jerusalem, you see this golden dome in the center of the old city on the Temple Mount. That's called the Dome of the Rock. And that was a building that was built way back in the 7th century. I've got the date, 691 AD. So we're talking just 60 years after Muhammad died, this beautiful, and it is beautiful, I've been on the inside of it, both not only pretty on the outside, but it's just the intricacies of the carving, the gold, gilded, everything, it's just really a beautiful thing. But that is not only the Temple Mount, but it's also believed to be the place where Muhammad was taken up into heaven on what was referred to as the Night's Journey. And he spent some time in heaven and received revelations, came down on earth. So that is actually considered the third most holy place on earth in the Islamic religion, behind Mecca and Medina. And you've got those three places. And so Muslims, they say, that's ours. And the Jews say, that's ours. And the Christians say, that's ours and the Jews, or that's ours. I mean, you've got a lot of premillennial Christians today that they're thinking like the Jews. The Messiah's going to come again. He's going to establish a thousand-year reign on earth, and it's going to be on that mountain. And so we've got to get the city of Jerusalem back from the Jews. And so there are all these secular conflicts and all these physical conflicts that come as a result of it. So that kind of thing is there. And it has existed now for centuries and centuries and centuries. And that's the reason why you'll probably never have peace in the Middle East. Because you have secular leaders without any religious inclinations that are trying to broker peace with a group of people, a bunch of people, whose whole focus is religious. And then just a job. And I think it's one of the primary reasons why there's been so much conflict over the centuries and continues to be today. That's a little bit of, I guess, political opinion or what's the name? What do you call it? Anyway, I'll throw that in for free. But going back to the origin of history, let's just read through this fairly quickly. Muhammad was born, and by the way, the spelling, I recognize it's often spelled with an O or a U. It looked like on most of the research I was doing that the spelling with the U, Muhammad, is the one that is most commonly used. But there are a number of variant spellings with regard to all these. But Muhammad was born into that polytheistic culture in Mecca. And claimed at 40 to begin to receive revelations, the angel Gabriel appeared to him. Again, the term Allah has reference to the one true God. I mean, their view is, of course, that there is but one God, and they claim that it is the God of Abraham. We've already talked about the problems that we have with their perception of who God is, as God is seen in their revelation. So it's a distortion. The word Islam simply means surrender. And so the Islam religion is a religion that wholly surrenders or submits to Allah. That's what is in the concept of that term. And then there is another word that is referred to as din. And again, pronunciations may not be great in this regard. But the idea is that Islam surrender to the one true God, complete and total surrender and submission to Him, is the only way to be acceptable. So the word din has reference to a way or a religion. And so the Muslim believes that Islam is the only true religion. So we recognize that the Muslim believes that Islam is the only true religion. So depending upon how the Muslims interpret certain of the scriptures in the Quran and certain of the sayings of Muhammad in the Hadith, they will basically either say you as an unbeliever will lose your soul, or you as an unbeliever we must destroy. So we kill you, or you convert, or we're going to leave you alone, but you have to realize if you don't become a Muslim, you're going to go to hell. So now again, let's kind of parallel that with regard to our beliefs and faith. I put out a video just today, and what I tried to do in that short video is to explain why it is that we feel it's important to evangelize. And it's basically this: if I see you walking down a path that will lead to your soul's destruction, I have a responsibility to share with you the truth of the gospel so that your soul might be saved, understanding that only those who are obedient to the gospel of Christ and accept Jesus as Lord will go to heaven. So the only difference between us and what the Muslim thinks with regard to his religion is that there are very few, though there are exist some, but there are very few extreme individuals who call themselves Christians and say, convert or die. Now, there were certain times in the history of Catholicism where that was practiced, but that generally isn't done today. But in Islam, there is some of that that's ongoing in our day and time. Okay, so there is that difference. All right, with regard to his history, we'll just go down a few other of the things that can get his life in perspective at least. When he began to receive these visions, he immediately began to preach them. So he claims to get these visions from Gabriel. Bring them to him. So they're divine visions. He begins to preach. And he's preaching in a polytheistic society, a monotheistic faith. Really upsets those polytheists who thought that the favor of the gods was necessary for them to be successful in their trade. So they ran him off. And he had already gained some followers by that time, but in order to not be killed, he had to leave Mecca. And he went to Medina. And he went to Medina at age 52. And again, so that's 10 years before he dies. 8 years later, he had enough followers that he could take 10,000 soldiers back to Mecca and basically walk right over. It wasn't very bloody battle at all. He just basically took over back in Mecca a couple of years before he died. And by his death in 632 A.D., he fell ill and died in 632 A.D., the Arabian Peninsula had been unified under his rule, his caliphate, his rule, as Islamic. And that was kind of the beginning of the spread of Islam. But that's kind of how it began. So we're talking about 22 years, an illiterate preacher who either believed or convinced people that he was receiving divine revelations, who because of his military abilities and because of the circumstances of the day, was able to consolidate the Arabian Peninsula and to lead that group of Arabians. I'm not sure exactly which is the preferred way of saying that, but to be Islamic in their faith. They accepted that religion, and then in subsequent centuries it spread. Okay, so that's the beginning origin. And Muhammad. Anybody questions, comments, anything to add about that section? Yes, Dave.
You know that third bullet was about Allah, the one God, Islam, surrender, being the one way of religion to be separate to Him. As you brought out tonight and other earlier classes, that Allah is the same as Jehovah and such like. Well, we don't use the term Allah, it would be Jehovah, because when you use Allah, everybody considered that to be Islam, of course. And when we studied the denomination, we had the same thing where we brought up some of them, well, my God wouldn't do this, or my, you know, they, in Christianity, they also had their own God. I mean,
oh, yeah. And yeah. We can be guilty of doing the exact same thing, remaking God into our own image.
And part of Islam, I mean, all these things, of course, applies to Christianity. We surrender to Jehovah, and it's the only one religion that's separate to God.
Yeah, there are some interesting parallels. There certainly are. And by the way, Allah is not the Islamic word for God. It is the Arabic word for God.
Right.
And in fact, if you go in Turkey, for example, and some of the other, Indonesia is another example, but their language is different and they have a different word for God other than Allah. So not every Muslim uses the term Allah. Now, there are some who think that that has to be the word used, the term, but not everyone does. And in fact, you have American Muslims today, for example, the Black Muslims, which is a different sect entirely, an offshoot of traditional Islam. That Black Muslims, they use the word Allah, even though they're English. So it's they still use that Arabic word. Anyway, that's just one of the peculiar or interesting things about it. I want to go on to again the origin history and just note the subsequent growth of Islam. So at his death, Muhammad dies. Now what? And in reality, there wasn't any instruction given as to what needed to happen. So basically, there are two groups that came out of it. There's one group that we know today as the Sunnis. They've always been known as the Sunni Muslims. They believe that the Muslim world should decide by consensus who the next imam or leader of the Islamic faith would be, who would head out the new caliphate. But there were some, a smaller minority, they're called Shia Muslims, that believe that in order for the religious leader and leader of Islam to be legitimate, he had to be a blood descendant of Muhammad. And the first three caliphates that existed, the first three theocratic states that existed following the death of Muhammad, those three leaders were not blood descendants of Muhammad, and the fourth was. And so you have the Sunnis that accept all four. You have the Shias that only accept the fourth and not the first three. And the sects that you have, the two major sects in the Islam religion today, the Sunnis and the Shiites, or the Shia Muslims, they had their beginnings way back after the death of Muhammad, and they exist today. And when you look at it, in the next bullet point there, the Sunnis believe Muhammad's death consensus should determine the next caliph or leader. Today, the Sunni Muslims, and I will say that when you're trying to look at it, many of the Sunni Muslims especially are moderate, modern, more accepting, more tolerant. They make up 85-90% of the Muslim world. The Shiite Muslims make up 10-15%. The reason why that it's hard to figure out exactly the same amount is kind of an interesting thing, because since the Sunnis are in control, if you have a population of majority Sunnis, like say it's a population in some mid-eastern country, and the majority of the Muslim population are Sunnis, but there is a small minority of Shias, well, the Sunnis will say that's a Sunni population, and they'll just ignore the minority and count them among them, even though they're Shias. So that's why there's a discrepancy in those numbers as to how many actually exist. And I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. Basically, the Sunnis saying, hey, we're the only important ones, they're not important. And the conflict often is a physical conflict and warfare between those two groups, even to this day. Okay, well, what happened was, and this is where that handout may come into play on the back, because it has basically five different headings. Muhammad, 610 to 632, which is, again, the last 22 years of his life, and then he died. And then the caliphates and the civil strife that existed as there was these intermarrying and the consolidation and such. But by the time 750 AD, you have what's referred to as the classical era of the Muslim religion. And it's kind of an interesting thing. You've heard about this in the past, for example, that in China, that China is responsible for the printing press, that China is responsible for paper. China is responsible for gunpowder. You look at China today, and you see kind of a backward society, a communistic, though capitalism and technology is having resurgence, but we think of China as being backward. But in history, there was a time when China was at the forefront. The same thing with regard to Muslims and the Arab culture, because back between 750 and 1258, it could be argued that the most sophisticated culture that existed at that time was as a result of Islam or involved with Islam. There were, for example, public hospitals that were established, the first time that had ever happened. Doctorates and universities established. It's believed that the Muslims possibly established the first known university, founded in 859. And so that was kind of golden age. But I think the most significant thing with regard to the growth of the Islamic faith is the rise and spread of the Ottoman Empire. And the Ottoman Empire is not an empire that we talk a lot about or we study about. But if you think of the Crusades was the Catholics' answer to the spread of the Ottoman Empire, the Turkish Empire, which was Muslim. And between the years of, I'll go back to get the date, 1299 and 1922, the Ottoman Empire existed. Now, by the time it got to 1922, it was on its last legs, certainly, kind of like the Roman Empire, you know, existed and was very powerful at one point in time and regressed and grew weak toward the end. But the Ottoman Empire existed in a form up until World War I. And it was as a result of the resurgence or the surge secular Europe to a very great extent. And the industrial age and the technological advances of Western Europe and the Americas that the Ottoman Empire began to lose its influence. So in that period of time, between 1299 and 1922, with the consolidation of the caliphates, the expansion of the Ottoman Empire, I mean, throughout that part of the world, the Islamic faith spread to where you have Muslims in China, you have Muslims in India, you have Muslims all over the, of course, the Middle East, and pockets of Muslims all through the world as a result of it. So that has gotten to the point to where, if you look on the last bullet point under origin history, 1.62 billion people today are Muslims of some flavor or variety. That's 23% of the world's population. That is second only to Christianity. That's why I had to put that in quotation marks. But when you talk about those who identify themselves as Christians, that's 2.4 billion at this point in time. But the Islamic religion is the fastest growing religion in the world. It is far outpacing other religions with regard to converts and those who are accepting. Okay, the only other thing we want to note, because we talked about the Dome of the Rock, under that was, again, the Crusades. And the only reason I bring that up is because, as we mentioned, it was a conflict between Catholicism and Islam, and I'm very careful to say Catholicism, not Christianity, in that case. And again, we understand and know the significance and difference between that. Unfortunately, the world in general thinks that, or says that, the Crusades, they were a conflict between the Christians and Muslims, and that's not the case. The Catholicism, the Pope wanting to regain the Holy Lands and to consolidate and establish his influence in the world, sent out armies on numerous occasions. Depending upon the historian you talk to, there are between 7 and 9 major crusades. And there were a number of other minor excursions and efforts in order to beat back Muslims and to regain control of certain aspects of disputed land that were overtaken by the Ottomans. So one thing I want you to kind of keep in mind with regard to this, and it's that way with regard to the history of Catholicism. I want to really put it there because the history of the Christian faith is not the history of the Catholic faith. But the Catholic religion was the predominant religion that purported to be Christian during this period of time. And so what you find with regard to the Muslims and the Catholics is physical conflict and warfare that existed throughout the Middle Ages, where there's an ebb and flow with regard to these influences. And the only thing that is different today is that those who call themselves Christians, by and large, have rejected the concept of physical warfare to expand the reaches of a physical kingdom and physical rule. Even Catholics today, they do not approve of that and don't think that's the way to go. But there are groups in the religion of Islam who continue to advocate for that. And that's why there are religious groups today who want to establish a caliphate and to establish Sharia law and those things. And we'll talk a little bit about that. There are some other things I could bring into this, since we'll have one more week. We'll finish our study looking at the nature of the religion in that second column, and I'll have enough material to kind of fill up that hour. And then we'll go on to our final discussion with some of the more minor religions, some of the Eastern religions, some other things that we can make note of to draw our study of comparative religion to a close. Appreciate very much everyone's kind attention tonight.